Carrot seed is far less than a millimeter in size, a tiny speck of dirt, dust in the wind. And yet it contains the DNA to sprout and to grow big, orange, beta-carotene-rich carrots, given darkness and moisture and the right temperature. Seeds have been the foundation of life and for life for millions of years. Today we are talking with the director and filmmaker of a new documentary about seeds that is being shown in film festivals all around the world. Seed, the untold story. That's our story in this hour here today on An Organic Conversation, your show on everything that makes life worth living. I'm Helge Hellberg. Seeds are an incredible invention by Mother Nature, preserving life from generation to generation, often thousands of varieties of the same species, able to withstand and learn from drought or other weather conditions, incorporate soil quality and other environmental factors. Seeds are a living database of the growing history to make sure the next generation of seeds is even better equipped than the generation before. Seeds are food, diversity, and resilience. There's a new film available that is talking about the role of seeds, that they play for society and for life itself. Seed, the Untold Story. That's the documentary, and all that and more is coming up in just a minute here on An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg, and this show is brought to you by Equal Exchange, a worker-owned cooperative that ensures your food is environmentally sound and socially just. Equal Exchange has been creating big change for small farmers for over 30 years by offering certified organic and fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate, bananas, and avocados. More on Equal Exchange at equalexchange.coop. That's equalexchange.coop. And by Udderly, offering beautiful and fun clothing for boys and girls that is made entirely from the unused fabric of prominent apparel manufacturers. Each garment reduces our eco-footprint by preventing this fabric from reaching the waste stream. Udderly, making sustainability fashionable and fashion sustainable. For more information, udderly.co. That's UTTERLY.co. And we are back to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. Seed, the Untold Story. That's our focus in this hour of An Organic Conversation, the kernel of life. And on the phone with me now are the directors and producers of Seed, the Untold Story, John Betts and Taggart Siegel, who are joining me from Portland, Oregon, and Spain, respectively. Do we have both of you gentlemen on the show?
Yes, thank you.
John.
It's great to be here.
Oh, you're there as well. Wonderful. Yeah. Technology. And we're speaking about the technology in a seat. Amazing. I love the film. Congratulations. It's an amazing follow-up from Queen of the Sun, which both of you produced as well. An amazing documentary about bees and pollination. Now it's about seeds. What is it about fertility for both of you that makes this your preferred topic that fascinates you both so much? John, do you want to go first?
Well, sure. I think it's actually great to hear you phrase it that way. So often I think people think our what makes us tick is extinction, because we're talking about the loss of diversity of seeds and the colony collapse of bees, and it's so great to think about it in the reverse and think about both that it's Taggart's first film was about a farmer and farming, and then to go into the pollinators, and then they come to the seeds. And I think there was a direct connection there that really pulled us in, which is, it occurred after the fact. We sort of thought, oh, we want to make this film because it is important to realize that diversity is at stake. And then we saw this great connection between Queen of the Sun and how the pollinator makes the one seed into the millions, you know. And so it's just a really great connection.
Oh, I thought that was totally obvious, maybe, because we are all in this environmental movement in one way or another. And me having worked in sustainable agriculture, I didn't even see the loss of diversity is the threat, and yes, it is happening, but really the theme and the love and your focus clearly on life and where else to place it than with bees and now with seeds. There's just, it's the same story. It's almost part two of Queen of the Sun. Taggart, what's your take on this? You've been in this for a while.
It's very much of a wake-up call, as bees were to me when we found out that honeybees were disappearing. We immediately went out there and started making Queen of the Sun. And the same thing happened with Seed, the Untold Story. It was out of a National Geographic magazine. I was looking at it at the doctor's office one day, and there was this like man standing there in the Arctic Circle, Svalbard Seed Bank, you know, where we store many of our seeds. And there was this quote saying that 94% of our vegetable seed varieties have disappeared since 1903. And I said, what? I didn't even know that. Like, here I am making films about farmers and about honeybees and beekeepers, and I had no idea that there was a potential seed shortage in the world. And the lack of, you know, the fact that the seeds have been disappearing so dramatically over the 100 years was just such a big wake-up call that immediately we started this film, and it's taken 3.5 years, and we're happy to know that it's getting out there in the world.
And before we talk about what contributes to the demise, let's talk about the demise. Tell our audience about seed. Can you give us a picture of what we are talking about? What's their role? How much loss have we experienced so far? John, again, do you want to go first? I remember that part of the film where you show really well, this is what we had 50 years ago or 60 years ago or 80 years ago, and this is what's commercially available now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we really based a lot of this off of a study by the Rural Advancement Foundation International. They did a study in 1983, which has been quite some time now, but it was sort of the most comprehensive study that we found when we started making the film. And they really chronicled what they estimated was about a 93% to 94% loss of seed diversity. And they based this off of vegetable seed varieties that were available commercially in 1903, and then they cataloged it against the National Seed Storage Laboratory, which is our national seed bank in Fort Collins, Colorado, in 1983. So over that period of time, looking at what was lining up, they found that, you know, for instance, out of 544 cabbages, there was only 28 left. Out of 34 artichokes, there were 2 left. 288 beets, 17 left. And so we just started to realize the magnitude of what was happening, and that spurred us to kind of dig deeper and say, okay, if these few varieties remained at that point, what's the story? What happened? You know, you go to the grocery store, you don't see that many varieties of any one food. You usually see a few apples, a broccoli, a cabbage. You don't see the diversity around you every day. And so we wanted to uncover why that was and the story behind that.
Yeah, and we've said many, many times during the duration or life of this show for 8 years now being on the air that, you know, potatoes, corn, certainly many, many other varieties, if you really look at the overall varieties in nature that once existed, we're talking thousands, right? Thousands and thousands. So that is kind of an abstract number in a way, even still very alarming, but they were never really commercialized in modern day history. You are now saying, well, from the 100 plus or 200 different varieties of beets that were commercially available just 100 years ago, we're not talking about thousands of potato varieties several hundred years ago, but right now, within one generation or two generations, from 100 or 200 or 300 varieties of that type of vegetable, we now have two or three or maybe eight commercially available seeds left. It brings it really home. Tagat, how did you fall across those numbers and why the urgency for you?
Well, it's reading books from Gary Nabham, who's in the film. He's the ethnobotanist, and he's such a wealth of information. And when he told us in the interview that the diversity in our seed stocks is as endangered as a panda or a golden eagle or even a polar bear right now, it's like one of these facts that, wow, you look at it through the lens of a seed. If a seed goes extinct, it's one seed that could possibly be the seed that feeds us into the future. And with many millions and thousands of seeds that become extinct, we're less able to feed ourselves if there was, the serious problem with climate change is that it's all controlled by these big seed industries, and seed stocks are more and more crucial to our future of our food. And if without the seeds, we're not able to feed ourselves the same way as when there was so much diversity. Because with diversity, that's what gets us through climate change. Because that one seed that we didn't think was that important possibly could be really important to get us through those very difficult times.
Yeah, let's talk about the role of seeds in terms of how much life on this planet is in form of a seed. I said in my intro, a carrot seed is, you know, far less than a millimeter in size. It's a tiny speck of dirt, really. And yet it contains the DNA to sprout and to grow big orange beta carotene rich carrots, and even a solar power plant on top with the carrot tops. It's incredible that all that comes out of this really, I mean, microscopic, almost small, tiny, super light, and it's all in there. When you talk about life on this planet and through your research, you're really going through different countries and even continents. For you, Tagat, how much life are we talking about?
Oh, it's just everything. I mean, the fact that one seed could turn into millions is really quite remarkable. I mean, seeds are one of the most awe-inspiring things I've ever kind of thought about, because it's something that can replicate and feed millions of people from those seeds. The problem is that we've eliminated much of the bounty and the diversity that we've once had. So getting that diversity back is the key to getting us through climate change and all the difficult things in front of us. Something that I've never ceased to be awed with, the fact that seeds do so much for us.
John, do you want to add to that?
Well, I think, you know, there's a great scene in the film where botanical explorer Joe Simcox, who's this incredible man who is searching for rare seeds and for wild plant relatives that may hold sort of keys to how plants can deal with things like desertification or flooding, or he goes to the Amazon and he goes to the deserts of Namibia, and it's a great scene. But part of his character and his conversation in the film is that we have, you know, 300,000, you know, varieties of plants in the world, and then he talks about how many of those are, you know, plants that produce, and those are plants that produce seeds, and then how many of them are edible, and it's, you know, some crazy number, like, you know, 30,000 edible plants, and then we eat just, you know, a handful of varieties in the grocery store. So, you know, really, we live in an amazing world, and we've developed a system in how to eat the crops that we eat every day, but we're, as Taggart said, we're so reliant on seeds for that. And so, you know, part of the interesting thing about making the film is we didn't want to make a film that was simply about food. We wanted to make a film that was about seeds. And so when we do that, sometimes it's funny because the, you know, obviously most of the seeds in the film we talk about is because we care about them because we rely on them for food. But we also took time in this film to illuminate aspects of seeds that just create awe and wonder for nature. And so looking at them as sculptural objects and looking at them as how they move, you know, sycamore seeds of these helicopters, you know, and pine cones explode their seeds out when they fall on the ground. So there's all sorts of other amazing things about seeds that we look at in the film as well.
The Kernel of Life, Seed, the Untold Story, a new documentary making its way through film festivals throughout the world, really. And we're speaking with the directors and producers, John Betts and Taggart Siegel, today in this hour of an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. John, when we, Taggart just touched on that, when we talk about the fertility of seeds, it is really quite stunning. For example, in the example in your film of corn, one single germinating corn seed would not just produce one corn stalk, but maybe two or three or four, depending on the variety. And one corn stalk has, dozens of seeds. So within one single seed, when we say that one seed can feed millions of people, it really doesn't take much in order to get to that magnitude. Of course, there's this beautiful story of the king who asked the person who saved his daughter's life, "What can I give you?" And he said, "Put one kernel of rice on a chessboard, and then on the next little square, double it." And by the time you get to, I believe, the 17th chessboard checker, you have the entire harvest of that kingdom. That is also how prolific seeds are in nature. Can you talk about that? Was that clear to you before you started, John? Or have you found an even greater awe for seeds?
You know, I don't think much was clear when we started the film at all. I think that part of the discovery of as filmmakers that we enjoy is that we sort of commit to something, knowing that, feeling that it has sort of a pulse, that it has a life to it, and that it's going to reveal an epic story in this case that was sort of global in its ramifications. So, you know, with the little gardening I have done as a filmmaker who's not primarily in that world, I knew that there was sort of one seed begets the millions, as Vandana Shiva says in Queen of the Sun, but I didn't really have an experience for what that means when you hold a seed in your hand to imagine the amount that can come out of it. And the power of it is truly awe-inspiring. And I think it is what sort of fueled a lot of our insight into making the film was fueled out of those feelings. And it was beyond just the food that comes out of the seeds. You talked about fertility early on, and it's really cultures inside the seeds, that we've been connected with seeds for 12,000 years since the dawn of very early agriculture, and so much of what's in a seed is tied to our culture. And so one of the things in this film that was incredible, that was really new for me, was to talk to Native American and Indigenous peoples that had fostered through their ancestry. You know, for instance, the corn that we know today in the United States came from the Oaxacan Valley in Mexico nearly 8,700 years ago. And it, before it was corn, it was this little, almost fossilized-looking kernel called teosinte. And so there's this incredible story in the seed, and every major crop seed, every seed has a story, and even every variety of seed has a story. So that was part of what made the film a joy to make.
Taggart, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, and especially working with the Native Americans, people like Lee from the Hopi Nation, he would, you know, when he was harvesting his corn, he would stop there and like tell us stories about the corn, that the spiritual people gave us this corn, And he would say things like, you know, this is the womb. Human peoples are seeds. And he would even call it his children. These seeds are my children. And it really went in very deeply for me, for both of us, because it's something where you start seeing seeds as more than just a material thing to put in your mouth to eat, but rather something that is so beautifully spiritually connected to that culture, to that DNA. And, you know, we heard that so much from many of the Native Americans. There's Amigdio Balan who really, you know, he's Incan, and he came to work on with the Tisuki Pueblo in outside of Santa Fe. And he would just say things like, you know, my grandfather told me to keep a seed in my pocket. Always keep a seed in my pocket, because if you have a seed in your pocket, you can walk and eat the seeds. And if you have money, you cannot eat the money. And it's like it's gold to them. And it started going in a much deeper way when they would speak about seeds as this really spiritual thing. And also that they usually would tear up and talk when they're talking about their seeds. It's that important, you know, the seed connection.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg, and I'm speaking with John Betts and Taggart Siegel, the co-directors and co-producers of Seed, The Untold Story, in this hour of An Organic Conversation. Please stay on the line. John and Taggart will take a quick break to honor our underwriters, and we'll be right back with so much more. This is An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. This show is brought to you by Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Become a nutrition consultant or a natural chef at one of their campuses, or learn from home in a self-paced mentored distance learning program. For more information on a degree in holistic nutrition or culinary arts, bowmancollege.org. And Fry Vineyards, America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Award-winning wines at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com. And thank you also to Earl's Organic Produce, a national distributor of organic fruits and vegetables that has been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. From grocery store to company cafeteria to caterers and personal chefs, anyone can buy from Earl's Organic. Certified organic produce at earlsorganic.com. And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. The Kernel of Life, Seed, The Untold Story, a new film, hopefully coming to a movie theater near you very soon. We're speaking with the directors and producers, John Betts and Taggart Siegel. John, before the break, Taggart spoke about the reverence that Native Americans or indigenous cultures still have and always had to seed. What is the greatest challenge to keeping seed diversification alive right now?
I think the greatest challenge is that we're so disconnected from sort of agriculture in our daily lives that we're not aware that we're part of a fabric of seed saving that's been around for thousands of years. And so even in this country 100 years ago, people were aware of the seeds of that their grandmother or their grandfather maybe brought from another country, or that were a very big part of their family recipes, or that grew the best corn or the best beans. And that has been lost, and with that we've lost a lot of the diversity. So one of the calls that really we feel impassioned about in the film is to raise awareness for people to take action, to participate in their sustainable and local farming communities, especially when it comes to seed saving. Try it out. For many of us, it will be our first time to actually grow a crop to seed and try and save them. And so we've started a campaign with Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance called the Million New Seed Savers Campaign. And the idea is just to, as Bill McDorman says, return to the ritual and to begin trying this again and to be a part of it. And not just that, but, you know, not all of us are experts. Support your local seed saving communities, whether that's finding a local seed library in your public library. These are popping up. We have over 500 of them across this country. Supporting your local nonprofit seed bank or heirloom seed company. So there's many ways to sort of renew this diversification and support the seed keepers who have been carrying the torch in many ways for the last 50 years.
And then you talked about Svalbard in the beginning, the northernmost place that is inhabited, outside of Greenland. Tuggard, can you comment on what is being done, not on a local level, but on an international level, to kind of prepare for a possible apocalyptic event or for a doomsday, so to say?
Yes. So the Svalbard Seed Bank up in the Arctic Circle in Norway, it's often called the Doomsday Seed Ball. And it's something that where many countries are backing their seeds up. And thank God this place exists. I mean, it's backing up the greatest seed vaults around the world. And they place their seeds in there. They often are in boxes, but then they're stored in a very cold conditions so they could last as long as possible. Because seeds are living organisms, and they'll die out if they're not preserved properly. And this the Svalbard Seed Bank is just very high tech, and it's built into the mountainside in very cold conditions in the Arctic Circle. And you know, but at the same time, we have to look at these seed banks as something where it's thank God they're there, but at the same time, we can't depend on them because they're very vulnerable. You know, a seed bank has been taken out, like in Syria, the U.S. actually bombed in Iraq, the seed bank, and destroyed one of the most important seed banks in the world. You know, that held many of the seeds, the old ancient grains of ancient times in this seed bank in Iraq, but it was bombed. So not saying that this could ever happen with the Svalbard seed bank, but you just never know, because there are earthquakes and there are vulnerabilities with seed banks. In the Philippines, a typhoon took out one of the largest seed banks in the Philippines from a typhoon. And so we just have to be very aware that these are places to keep seeds, but they're not the answer. You know, so, the answer is more in the local communities.
Yes, local resilience. But when we talk about Svalbard in Norway, and you call it the Doomsday Vault, what are these designed for? What are those seed banks? They're housing thousands or tens of thousands of seeds for a possible apocalyptic event, so that we have afterwards again seeds to plant. Right? Is that a good summary?
Correct. And they've just recently in Syria, they've taken out some seeds from this Svalbard seed bank to restore some of the seeds that were lost during the war. So
those are not Norwegian seeds up in Norway there. They have seeds from all around the world.
All around the world. Every country that has a major seed bank can put their seeds there. but it's not for the common person. We can't go get seeds there. So it's going to be the major seed banks around the world putting their seed collection, backup seed collection.
And is that operated and run by the government, or who's taking these precautionary steps?
Well, Norway gave a great deal of money and land and time and effort to build this seed bank. So it's run, you know, very few people actually run it. It's more of a storage facility. In fact, there's only a few months, I believe, that you could actually go there and actually enter. But it was all started by, you know, the idea to make sure that there's a solid backup for all these countries around the world to store their seeds. So it's a crucial thing. And in fact, we couldn't even film there. We had to get some, we actually bought footage for the film, because every time we tried to get permission wasn't granted at that time because mm-hmm. the seed bank wasn't open.
Yes. I think we lost John Betts,
yes.
Your co-director and co-producer, but that would have been the next question for him in regard to genetic engineering. You, of course, when we talk about seeds, genetic engineering of seeds and the patenting of engineered seeds, which now shifts ownership to a corporation instead of to ownership of life, that everyone, every person can share. Seeds have always been free, not so anymore, especially since the U.S. Supreme Court approved that bioengineering of seeds override the right of the farmer to save seeds, so to say, copyrights over seed rights. Can you speak to that? What have you seen around the world? What are the consequences? What's the dilemma here?
Well, as Andrew Kimbrell says at the Center for Food Safety, I mean, Monsanto basically takes one gene out of tens of thousands of genes and changes that and says, now we own that whole plant. So as he says, it's one of the most extraordinary giveaways, giving corporations the natural reproduction of all life forms. I mean, this is really an outrageous thing that you could actually own life. And in fact, for 200 years, the patenting of life was prohibited. So, you know, especially around this respect for foods. But that changed, you know, in 1978 with the first patent of a living organism. It was an oil microbe, and that opened the doors to start patenting, you know, seeds. And that's, they've just taken it so far, these corporations. And in fact, so much loss has happened because of these corporations gobbling up hundreds, thousands of mom-and-pa seed companies. Mm-hmm. Like there's some statistics, I think about 20,000 seed companies have been bought up by large corporations. And then they don't share the seeds again. They actually, the catalogs don't have those amazing heirloom seeds that once were out there. So the diversity started dwindling, especially with hybrid seeds coming in the 1920s, there was a great loss of seed diversity because farmers started buying seeds every year because they had bigger yields. It didn't mean that the food was more nutritional. It just, they had bigger corn yields and things like that. So farmers stopped saving their seeds. And you could just see over 100 years how the diversity of seeds just got smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yes.
And so now with genetically engineered seeds, it's really doing so much devastation because the patenting of life for a seed, for something that is so important, it needs to be shared by, you know, by everybody. Everybody needs to have seeds and to grow food and
yes.
be free.
There's also the genius of nature that you document so well in Seed, the Untold Story. Seedthemovie.com is the website, by the way. Seedthemovie.com. We are not talking about seeds in isolation. We are talking about seeds in times of climate change and global warming. And in your film, you show so well that a bioengineered seed used in India that then experiences, several years of drought, makes the farmer completely dependent on the company. They signed contracts to buy the next seed again from that company. They didn't save their own seeds, which were potentially more drought resistant and more adapted to that natural environment. So we are taking, it's kind of a double impact. We are patenting life, and all of a sudden you have to buy life in form of a seed from a company, but you're also losing your own seed saving, which is intelligence, right? It's local or regional intelligence that you had for generations often of seeds that were adopted to perhaps several years of drought or other weather conditions.
Yeah, and especially with hybrid seeds, suddenly a disease can hit and it could wipe out, the crop. And if they don't have their own local seeds, and this happens in India all the time, where they come in and they tell the local people that their seeds are inferior, and here are hybrids, you can make money, and many of the seed keepers or the farmers, they go in incredible debt because they have to buy the chemicals, and they have to buy the seeds, and then they have to sometimes buy a tractor and all that, and they go into debt. And there's been over 300,000 suicides in India from farmers' debts. And not only farmers' debts, but all the poisoning that comes from the pesticides and the herbicides and the fungicides that they apply on the land. And so there is this return to the land, and that's what we really want to show in a positive way, is that the farmers that are turning away from the industrial agricultural format and returning back to their traditional seeds and their traditional farming so they could feed themselves if there's a drought or monsoon, yes, or situation where they need their local seeds to survive.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg, and our topic in this hour is The Kernel of Life, Seed, The Untold Story, a new film showing the role of seeds in our society throughout history and right now, how important seed diversity is and what is being done around the world to preserve that seed diversification that is under so much scrutiny and threat. I want to end on that, Taggart. Having traveled the world for this film, what's being done around the world to ensure as much seed diversity as possible? Do you feel hopeful? Is this really a movement that is anywhere in every country to some degree? People are waking up to it?
Yes, very much so. I mean, with Vandana Shiva, who's in the film, and her Naftanya in India, where her headquarters is for kind of teaching young farmers how to farm, and they've started seed banks all over India. There's about over 150 seed banks, if not more, that are starting to spring up. And these resilient little kind of seed banks in these areas, farmers could help each other and they could share their seeds. And they're not dependent on buying hybrids and, genetically modified seeds. It's a place where we've seen in the United States where local farmers are starting to turn away from, farming with genetically modified corn to being more productive with using commercial seeds, mm-hmm, and getting back to organic farming, because organic farming is really where the pesticides aren't being used. I mean, if there's one big thing that I could really say is very detrimental to our health is pesticides. And many of these seeds that are hybrids and genetically modified are coated with neonicotinoids. And as we know, these seeds grow out and it's systemic. It's in the plant, and it's often in corn and soy and even potato, where it's in the pollen. And when bees or pollinators or birds eat this or get the nectar or get the pollen, it's poisoning them. It's deadly poison for them, and it's also poisonous for us. So what I love is that people are turning back to local diverse food, getting that seed banks going, seed libraries. There's over 300 seed libraries that have sprung up all over the United States right now in local libraries.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yes. And we're right back at the bees. We're right back to the beginning, the cycle of life from bees to pollen and seeds and right back to bees. Where can people watch the film? What's the best way? Seedthemovie.com is the website for showings and for streaming. Is that right now the best source?
Yes. It's the best source to come to www.seedthemovie.com. And also, there's this movement that we have with Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance with Bill McDorman, who's in the film, where you could become part of the Million Seed Savers campaign, where you could sign up and say that you commit to growing a seed out. And just the awe and wonder of growing a seed is really great, and be part of those million seed keepers.
Well, if you're,
that's where we could fight back.
If your goal is to inspire people to regain their reverence for seeds and their joy of seeds and their respect and awareness around seeds, you certainly are the perfect person, and you have done that and you keep doing that. And it's such a joy to have you on the show again after Queen of the Sun with this new film, Seed, The Untold Story. Equally important, same story really overall. But thank you for your love and care and passion. A pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being on your show again.
Thanks, Taggart. We speak soon. Good luck. Take care. Bye-bye. That's Taggart Siegel, the co-director and co-producer with John Betts, who we somehow lost in the middle there. But they were joining us from Portland, Oregon and Spain, respectively. The new movie, The Kernel of Life, Seed, The Untold Story, in this hour of an organic conversation. And we'll be right back with so much more. I'm Helge Hellberg. We're staying with food production, the update from the San Francisco Produce Dock of what is happening right now, what's the best buy, how you can save money, what's in season. And that is the voice of the San Francisco produce market, Earl Herrick of Earl's Organic, now with us. Earl, are you there?
Hello, Helga.
Hey.
I'm here.
Local produce is not quite in yet, but it's starting to.
Oh, yeah. It is exploding here. it's so fantastic, especially for new employees in the warehouse.
Sure.
Because every day there's another item. And
really, every day, every other day,
every day. For example, just last week we had some figs, the first arrival of figs from the desert.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their season's really in August, but the first ones from the desert.
Sure.
White nectarines and white peaches, yellow nectarines, yellow peaches. We had some pluots, and that's just on the veg side.
Sure.
Fruit side,
yeah.
Veg. And what is so cool is that it's all so local now. It's all around us. And it really starts with cherries in May, and then the apricots, and then the apricots will continue, and then all the different varieties of peaches, nectarines, plums.
Mm-hmm.
They just cascade in a mile a minute. I know I've run across endless amount of people that don't like some stone fruit. Think nectarines and peaches. And what I've been able to derive from that is they've never had a good one. They've never had the opportunity either to know how to ripen it.
Yeah, so the biggest issues I always see is it's either super firm, has no sweetness, or it's mealy.
Yes.
How can you ripen it or pick it that won't happen? Oh, yeah, I didn't mean picking from the tree. I mean, how can you choose that as a consumer?
Well, sometimes it's just an experience you get over time where there's a feel for it. First of all, it should be firm, but not rock hard firm. So you want to turn it around to its stem side, where the stem is sticking out just a little bit. And if it's really green in that stem, it's probably not going to ripen.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay if it has kind of a light green.
Cool.
Also, in the back, as you turn it around to the other side, the background color of the peach should not be green. It should be more yellow to gold to red. So that's how you do it. In other words, the color has got to be at a certain point. Now, when you take it home, I don't refrigerate my stone fruit unless I buy so much, but I like to buy it more frequently and eat it more frequently. So I'll buy like 3 or 4 pieces that I'm going to eat in the next couple of days. So I leave it out on the counter on a natural fiber cloth, so it has a nice air barrier between whatever it's sitting on, and let the natural air flow through it, so it doesn't rot at that point of touching.
It prevents mold growth, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And you check it out every day. And now a peach and a nectarine will get very aromatic. You can smell it. So you just, and it'll also get a little bit dull. Now, that I don't mean super dull. Again, these are all shades of gray. Just a little bit of dull, that means it's starting to ripen. And then you cut it in half and check it out. Now, don't wait too long. So part of it is the learning process. You cut that when you go, not quite where I want it. So you wait another day for that next peach until you finally get a sense of what it is. Not unlike avocados in their own way, when is that ripe? There's a certain feel to it, there's a certain aroma, and if you continue to do it, you will get to the point of knowing.
And you're saying you have to do it, right? It's unlikely to find a perfectly ripe piece of stone fruit or peach in the store, even though we say, you know, try your produce before you buy it, and I'm sure somebody can cut a slice of a peach for you to try in the store. It's okay if that's not quite there yet. As long as it's not all green, it will ripen really nicely at home.
Yeah. The only time you're going to find, I think the best opportunity to find something at the point of purchase that's going to be ripe is going to be at a farmer's market.
Uh-huh.
Many farmers
sure.
do that. They bring some fruit that's ripe and ready. Because they know that's what they want to do. But in a store that has big displays,
sure.
they just can't afford it. They won't hold up.
Yeah, yeah.
But what you can do is ask for a sample. It'll be firm, so it may not be that wonderful full flavor yet. But if you get a sweetness, you know in a couple of days that will turn into a higher sugar piece of fruit.
Yeah, cool. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So helpful.
Yeah, and there's so many varieties right now. And there's also plums. And there's, you know, white and yellow nectarines, white and yellow peaches. And I think right now, here we are in the first couple of weeks of June, the white peach is just starting to come out. There's some really nice varieties around that you can find. I would think look for something that's called an ivory princess. Another one's called a snow bright. Another one's a white lady. It's nice to get to know varieties, too. So ask your produce people what variety it is. And if they just say it's a white peach, you say, well, it's got to be a variety.
Sure.
You get to know them a little bit better. For example, one of my favorite yellow peaches, which is out around now, is called a Flavor Crest. And that's an older variety that not everybody carries it. But, you know, for those in the know, when that sign
sure.
goes up in the store, that's a guaranteed sale.
Get to know your peach. Thank you for that update. Stone fruit, check it out. Ripe it at home. Great tips. Now you know how to do it without having it go moldy and what to pick in the store. And amazing. Makes my mouth water. Thank you so much,
oh, yeah.
Earl. We'll have you back next week.
Looking forward to it, Helga.
Me too. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye. That's What's in Season, and that is Seed, the Untold Story. This hour of an organic conversation all about food production, life, and reverence. Again, the movie is Seed, the Untold Story, seedthemovie.com, the website. Also, earlsorganic.com for What's in Season this week, produce tips and recipes, and so much more. This is an organic conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with another episode next week. Take good care. And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thank you so much for listening. A big thank you also to our associate producer, Kristen Ponger. An Organic Conversation is made possible through listeners like you and the fantastic support of our underwriters. Equal Exchange, a worker-owned cooperative that ensures your food is environmentally sound and socially just. Equal Exchange has been creating big change for small farmers for over 30 years by offering certified organic and fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate, bananas, and avocados. More on Equal Exchange at equalexchange.coop. And Utterly, offering beautiful and fun clothing for boys and girls that is made entirely from the unused fabric of prominent apparel manufacturers. Every garment reduces our eco-footprint by preventing this fabric from reaching the waste stream. Utterly, making sustainability fashionable and fashion sustainable. For more information, utterly.co. Also, Earl's Organic Produce, a national distributor providing certified organic fruits and vegetables for your store, home, or business. Are you a chef? Have a catering business, or planning a party, or simply just love organic produce? Anyone can buy directly from Earl's Organic at wholesale prices. The website is earlsorganic.com. And Fry Vineyards, America's first certified organic winery, producing organic and certified biodynamic wine without synthetic sulfites or other preservatives. Family-owned and operated since 1980. Fry Vineyards, Mendocino County award-winning wines. For more information, frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com. Lastly, thank you as well to Bowman College, focused on holistic nutrition and culinary arts for over 20 years. Bowman College offers professional training programs that prepare individuals for careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Their website is bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org. If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, go to anorganicconversation.com or subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play so you'll never miss an episode. And for more information, health tips, recipes, and your daily dose of inspiration, find us on Facebook and Instagram at An Organic Conversation and on Twitter at Talk Organic. I'm Helge Hellberg, and we'll be back with another great episode right here, same place, same time, next week. See you then.